a better way. You don't have to be another fan.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3586 of the Survival Podcast. Today is Wednesday, November the 20th, and since it's a Wednesday, you know what that means, interview day. And I have one of the coolest people we ever talked to waiting to be brought in the virtual green room, I guess you would call it, Nicole Sauce. And we're going to be talking to Nicole. Are we going to talk about coffee? No. Well, sort of, because we always will talk a little bit about coffee, because you got to have coffee when you're podcasting. We'll probably talk a little bit about my three things and all, but the main subject today is going to be sheep. And what does it take to just raise sheep in the backyard of your homestead? I think that's something people are like, oh, it'll be easy. I'll get some sheep. They eat grass. Everything will be just perfect. Does it work out that way? Not exactly. It's something you have to refine a process for, but first time you do it, you're going to run into trouble. And I've always believed that the best way to learn a thing is by experience, but also in combination with someone else who had the experience first. That way you can find out all the things they did that they're like, this'll work, and turns out it didn't, or this'll work, and it sort of kind of did, but you had to tweak it a little bit, or this'll work, and you totally shouldn't do that, or this'll work, but yeah, it does, but you better do it before the other thing shows up. I'm sure we'll have stories like that and many more from Nicole today. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, is KnifeKits.com, which at this point I think is the longest continuous running sponsor that I have for a podcast. They might be, I don't know if this is true or not, they might be the longest running continuous sponsor of a podcast, period. These guys came on board with me in February of 2010, and it is now November 20th, 2024. My brain is too broke this week. I can't do that math, but I think it's about 14 years. It's kind of crazy. So check these guys out. They have everything you need to start making knives on your own the easy way, starting in kit form. But if you're kind of advancing beyond that, you can also get amazing raw materials, everything you need to do kydex and leather projects as well, some really cool pins for the mosaic pins in your knives. And this is a great thing to do with a kiddo, you know, like dad and son, mom and son, grandkid, niece, nephew, whatever, and actually build something with them and turn that into an heirloom. I know if I had a knife that I made with one of my grandparents, nothing would ever get me to let go of it. Next up today is Start9 Private Sovereign Computing Servers, man. You guys want to check these things out. If you can plug a device in, follow some instructions, install apps on a phone, you could totally use a Start9 server. You can use it for things like storing all your passwords in a way where no one else has access to them, creating end-to-end encrypted text messaging just for you and the people that you choose to allow into your system, accessing all your data from anywhere in the world over Tor, but hosting your own data so that someone else doesn't have control over it. Run your own Bitcoin node, run your own Lightning node, run your own BTC pay server to act as your own payment processor and truly be your own bank and more. You can learn all about this at Start9.com. And remember, Start9 gives a really great discount. Start9, 9% off all of their products for MSB members. And if you're a Fold card user, you can go buy a gift card for Start9, get 9% back in sats, use the gift card to pay, and still get 9% off the purchase price when you use your MSB discount. So it's a really sweet deal. With that, let's bring Nicole on. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still nursing a hoarse voice after a long workshop. I'm sure you are still recovering too because you were so helpful with it. Thanks for that, by the way.
Oh, I had a great time.
It's always a great time, but it's always a better time when you're here. I don't think you've missed very many of them, though. I think you've been almost every one since the first one you came to.
I haven't missed any since the first one I came to, except for when you do those like surprise weekend things that pop up. I don't do the pop-up weekends usually.
I think the Anarchapoco one too, because that was like in the depths of February hell in Tennessee and everything was probably frozen.
Actually, it was because there was a Self-Reliance Festival that weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That is right.
Or I would have been there.
So we don't really need to introduce you to the audience. You're on the show pretty much two or three times a month in Expert Council. You've been on many times for interviews, but just for people that might be turning into the first episode today, who is Nicole Sauce and how does a Nicole Sauce end up in the middle of Tennessee on a homestead?
Nicole Soss hails from Oregon, which is on the left coast, and grew up in a very left environment and was a very left person until she asked herself this question. How would I make the transit system in Portland, Oregon work better? And then the answer to that question was, I would change these things. And then and then the little voice said, but that's not fair. That's not fair. So from that moment on, I endeavored on just a life that quickly took me over to libertarianism. And then once you get there, you become an anarchist pretty quickly. And all along the way, I have had a passion for building things from absolute scratch and learning how they work. And eventually I moved to Tennessee, which is a freer state than Oregon, and ended up on a homestead roasting coffee. The only reason I'm a coffee roaster, though, Jack, is because I was at your workshop showing people how to roast coffee as a side hustle. And I publicly stated I would never take it commercial because it would cost too much money. And that was me showing everybody I'm stuck in the poverty mindset. And the minute the words came out of my mouth, I realized I actually do want to grow this commercial. I'm lying to myself. I'm lying to all these people. And because I was at your workshop, the thing that happens there that's the most amazing part is the right person's in the room at the time you need them. Brian Norton walks up to me and says, you can actually get into a slightly smaller roaster for a lot less money and build it that way. So then I was on your show about a month later, launched a Kickstarter. Y'all financed my first roaster, and I have been roasting coffee ever since then, as well as doing my podcast out here in the country, helping to teach people how to build their life the way they want it.
So how did you get started with sheep? I was all in on sheep being a really great little ruminant because they're a lot smaller and easier than cattle. And then I went to New Hampshire or Vermont and taught at one of Ben's workshops. And then they had a sheep go down with fly strike. And I saw that and I went, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. And they're shearing the sheep in August because that's the only thing you can do to help with that. And I'm like, okay, no sheep. Then I learned about Dorpers and St. Croix and hare sheep. I'm like, okay, yeah, sheep again. And then I looked at my property and said no. So what made you decide, like, I'm going to actually do this?
Originally on this homestead, I started with chickens and goats.
Okay.
And goats are really good at getting out of fencing and really good at climbing on things like your house, if your house is a relatively low house. And while I love their mischievous nature, as a result of that, my goats don't rotate and do what I want the goats to do here. So everybody kept saying, you need rabbits, you need sheep. And I kept thinking of sheep like the little puffballs in the field and only eating grass. And then one day a lady applied to be on my show to talk about raising backyard sheep. And her name was Dawn. And she came on the show and talked about it. And that set the seed. But I still wasn't willing to do it because it felt like it would be a lot of work. And then Nick Ferguson came out to do a consult here. And I just had all this underbrush everywhere. And he said, really, you should run sheep through here, Nicole. If you're not going to run goats, run sheep. So I finally decided, okay, paired with food insecurity being and sort of the delivery problems that we were having, it was 2021 that this happened. I thought, you know, that's a good way to grow meat. I know how to raise livestock. I talked to Tactical Redneck, who lives on the property with me, and we decided, yeah, let's look for some sheep. And what I had done in the intervening years is just learned that what kind of sheep do well in my area, which is a very important thing to find out for your area, and then talk to some other people who raised them. So I had an idea that maybe I could do it, because originally I was thinking like sheep and shearing and the wool and all of those things. So that's how we got started with them. And the cool thing is we were at Self-Reliance Festival and Don walked by and heard Tactical saying he wanted sheep. And she's like, well, I want to sell my sheep. So that same person who came on my podcast, that's the sheep we ended up with.
That's cool. That's really cool. I'm with you on the wool thing, like fly strike number one. But number two is Greg Giudice. I heard Greg Giudice say something. I'm like, I'm done. And it was, it will cost you more money to pull the wool off the sheep than you get for the wool. Why the hell would you want to do that? And I know somebody's going to be in the audience saying, I make money on my wool or whatever, and okay, good for you. But that's like an aggregate average from a guy that's been ranching since before we were born. And when, like, an old dude that eats peaches off of a knife out of a can gives you advice on a back porch, you might want to take it and consider it seriously.
100%.
You know. So when you got these sheep, what were you expecting it to look like? All pastoral and, you know, the Disney birds were going to come sing and land on the sheep, and it was just going to be beautiful, right?
I think that everybody who gets into homesteading goes through this cycle with our new idea where we're like, biochar, I'm going to do biochar, and that means I get to have a campfire every night, and it'll be really easy, and it'll work every time, right? So with the dream with the sheep was that there would be this flock of sheep, and we would rotate them through my property on a 60-day cycle every 3 to 7 days to keep them out of the parasite cycle, right? So we didn't have to use any medications. And they would eat all the things they were supposed to, and they'd never get out, and they'd never eat my food forest. And then I would end up with meat. And I would end up with, like, friendly sheep I could pet on but still take them to the butcher. That's what I thought it was going to be like.
It wasn't, was it?
No.
No, what was it like? What was, like, the first summer? Wasn't the first summer that you had sheep, like, the summer of the infinite heat wave where, like, cattle fell over in Nebraska and shit?
Yeah, so they arrived, and the thing about my homestead is grass grows really fast here. And if you don't have something taking care of that, then you have to take care of that. So we're talking once a week, sometimes twice a week when we're getting those regular summer rains that are so reliable in Tennessee. And the day the sheep arrived was the last time we saw rain for about 3 months. So we had what was here already, but we had just come out of spring, and then the sheep arrived and no rain happened, which meant they were tearing through paddocks in warp speed. And the only reason we were able to keep them rotating is my neighbor let me rotate them on his property too. So they rotated through my property next door to that. And then a fourth place with 16 acres. And this is for, I think there were 11 of them that first time, 10 or 11 at first. So that was a problem. And then it was always really hot outside. So you're doing fencing. So what we also found out is that mobile infrastructure is great because you can move it anywhere. And so the plan for infrastructure was we had the reels, we had the step in posts, we had the fence chargers, and we would just, you know, move the wire and move them from place to place to place. Except when you have rocky, steep ground, you know, those are designed for these. I don't know where these pastures exist exactly, Jack, but there are places in the world apparently where not only is it flat,
there's
dirt, a topsoil.
Yeah. Both things.
So you put it in the ground and it just sticks in. And they have these devices that will roll out 3-strand wire that you just on a reel roll it out and step it in as you go.
Easy, and there's people on YouTube and they're like, you just step it in. And you're like, the fuck you do?
Yeah. No. We broke them trying to step them in. And then, you know, your line's nice and straight, right? No, it's like zigzagging around all of the things and places we can't go. And if your ground is not wet, it's harder to get a good ground on your electric fence. So then it doesn't zap them. And then guess what happens to the sheep?
They get out.
They get out.
Yes, they do.
They get out. So what I learned is that it was roughly 10 times harder than we thought it would be. And I'm usually expecting it to be harder, but not that much harder. And luckily, local insights are amazing. So when you find yourself in this situation, if you can find people locally who do this and learn what they do without judgment, because they'll be doing it differently than you. Most people raising sheep here don't care about vaccinations and antibiotics. I care about vaccinations and worming and antibiotics. And so when they tell me all the vaccines I have to do, I just sort of nod and okay, but how do you treat this, you know, this malady that it has? Or how do you, what do you do when you get mastitis or whatever any of those things are? And having a sheep mentor who is willing to talk to you, who is similar in philosophy, is also helpful. So I had the original owner, Dawn. She was available every time I had a question. I had a local veterinarian who has all in on the medications, guys. But she has a similar approach to us where it's survival of the fittest. We're not trying to keep the weak ones alive. So her, you know, she'd be on the phone with me and she'd be like, do you want me to come out and shoot it or do you want to shoot it? You know, that's sort of her. But she knows so much about the local area that I had her blessing on breed, and the breed I have are St. Croix, and I have a couple that have some Katahdin in them. They do great here. You saw them in the heat. They had been here from Ohio for like maybe 2 weeks when you got here.
Yeah, they were panting like dogs, but that was, like I said, that was the same heat front that killed cattle that had been line bred in Nebraska for so long that people thought it was a conspiracy theory and the government reached in and turned up the sun or something. I mean, that was an unusual climatic event.
Yes, and we had them in a microclimate on my property that's the coolest microclimate, but it was by no means cool. It just had a lot of shade, and it's in a little ravine where a breeze goes through. Mm-hmm. But they all lived. You thought they were going to die. I wasn't sure they weren't. I was starting to look at, do I freeze gallon jugs of water and just like place them in the pasture at that point?
Stick their ass on them or something. Like, yeah. I did. I didn't think they like all were going to die, but I'm like, at least one or two of those are going to fall over. I've never seen a sheep pant like that. They were panting like a dog after a run.
Yeah, they were not happy. But
so what did this all teach you?
Well, it didn't teach me much about jumping in with both feet, because I'll do that anyway. But it should have taught me not to jump in with both feet. It taught me to increase my expectation of how hard things are and to establish things. So when I try something new, I now find a mentor in advance, right? So for raising sheep, I would find a sheep mentor. I would get the resources you need. I have a couple here, like behind me. I have books by Laura Lawson, which cost your right nut to buy. They're really expensive, but you can solve almost any problem by reading those books. And so having that reference on hand, the reason I had that is these are not my books. These are Dawn's books. And when she delivered the sheep, she said, when I get sheep, I want these back, but you're going to need these.
Okay.
Finding an actual sheep farmer was a big change for me. And that was the person who is willing to teach me how to do an intravenous shot and those sorts of things. So finding somebody who will let you do the hands-on, because just hiring in a veterinarian, you don't always get to do what they're solving for, right?
Yeah.
So I know this from pigs. We have them out to castrate them, and I want to learn how to castrate a pig. The pigs are all castrated before I ask the question when a vet's here.
Yeah.
They're fast.
They're fast, and like they're on the clock to make money. So they're being fast as much for themselves as for you, because the longer they're there, the more you have to pay them. And I guess that lesson there would be is if you want your vet to teach you something, ask them to slow down.
Yeah, and pay them more. I will pay
them
you
more
to teach me to do this. He didn't want to come out and castrate him anyway, right? The vet I found who's local here, who's the survival of the fittest vet, was the third vet I went through before that was in place. So finding that right one is really helpful, and it can be tricky in your area. And then you have to have a tough skin if you're going to go on forums and ask questions, because when you go on forums and ask questions, people are going to tell you everything you're doing wrong.
You're stupid.
The best forum is...
You killed all your sheep. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not limited to livestock. The first time I had Jessica Mills on, she said the first time she asked a question on a forum about water filters, it opened this cascade of everybody calling each other stupid and saying everybody else was going to die. And these were all people that had like done through hikes, had used these water filters for years, but they're shouting at each other. Like, forums are useful, but they also have that problem.
They do. And I think it's Sheep 101 on Facebook, one of the best places to get advice. The problem is there are four people who raise sheep on there, who raise probably thousands of sheep at a time in Montana or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And the question I'm asking is for a flock of 15 sheep or 20 sheep. It's a very different scale.
Yeah.
And so their answer, they'll come out swinging and mean, and you don't know what you're doing. And I can't believe people get sheep when they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they do all that judgment. And then they give you an answer that's not helpful at all. And then the other people who actually raise smaller flocks.
Yeah.
They give you good answers. So I've had a lot of, you know, we had a bottle lamb this year. which I wouldn't usually do, but there was a reason. We decided to keep her because she was rejected because the mom had triplets, but appeared healthy. And having a very friendly ewe in the flock can help us with some of the more timid sheep. So we decided to bottle raise her, but I couldn't get a sheep colostrum at the store. And I didn't have any on hand because it had never occurred to me I would bother with a bottle baby in my philosophy.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I'm asking, can I use goat colostrum?
If you were raising 3,500 head, you probably would not.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just let it be rejected and go on. And then I'm also not going to keep one alive that has, like, back legs that don't work for that genetic.
No.
Yeah.
No. And if you're going to keep something like that alive, never breed it and kill it and eat it. I mean, that's the other side of it. But I think there is a lesson, though. There's very few people that are going to run 3,500 head and then be able to answer a question for somebody raising 20 and actually do a good job with it. I think the only one I know of like that is Judy, Greg Judy.
But he isn't, right? Yeah. So he's helpful to learn from, but his philosophy for training your sheep to keep in the fence is to shoot them if they get out of the fence.
Yeah, yeah.
My philosophy is, depending on where it is in the meat production cycle, it might be worth it to move it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't get to rotate with everybody, but I get the meat in about 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just because I want that financial payback. If I had 1,000 sheep, that would be different.
Yeah, it's different. For those not familiar with what she's talking about, Greg's philosophy is, I pull up to move my sheep today. There's one sheep outside the fence. 3006 out of the gun rack, bang, that sheep is on the table, that's in the freezer, that's their personal meat. And his reasoning is sound. Again, when you're raising thousands of sheep, things are different. And he's like, if I stick that sheep back in the fence, it'll jump back out. And then tomorrow there'll be three. And when I put them back in, there'll be six. And then there'll be 20. And then half the herd knows how to get out. So he's breaking mimicry there. But I'm with you. People say that. But when you have 10 of something, one is 10% of your herd.
Yeah, you have that's like $350 to $400 you're shooting.
Yeah, when you have 1,000, one is a tenth of a percent of your herd, and you still take the meat yield for yourself. So I get what he's saying. What I'm saying about Greg is he's not going to tell you you're fucking stupid.
Right? Oh, that's
and
true.
Mock you and tell you you're an idiot, and I can't believe you're getting sheep. Like, he understands that not everybody's a big-time sheep raiser. So how did you... What were some of the biggest problems you had, other than it was hot as shit, and how did you solve them?
My biggest problem was not learning enough about how rumens work before they came onto my property.
Ah.
And in my first month, we had one get so much bloat that she died.
Mm.
And when one dies, it's always your favorite one that you want to keep. This one was pregnant. And I think in hindsight, the reason she died is I rotated her through somewhere with cherry trees and they were dropping their leaves because it was hot.
Yeah.
And the fresh cherry leaves aren't necessarily the problem. It's when they concentrate down when they dry that they can cause poisoning. And then we had never dealt with bloat before, caught it way too late and she died.
Yeah.
And I talked to Billy Bond about it right afterwards, and he said, well, you should have titrated them onto the pasture because we just moved them here like I did with the goats and just like, here you go.
There's all this food.
Yeah. He's like, no, you get hay from the local area. You let them have a little bit of access and kind of wean them on. And I hadn't thought of that because I've never had to do that with other, you know, with goats, which was my background. And, you know, now if a new animal comes in, that's what it goes through. First it quarantines, and then second, it gets a little bit of access, and then more access, and then more access. Unless there is a guy who has St. Croix 5 miles from me, his can come to my pasture and probably not die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. The fencing thing ended up being a much bigger deal than I thought. For a couple of reasons. One is the grounding issue in this ground that's very rocky. And so I think we currently have six or eight grounding rods over in the pasture we use the most. Eight. Okay. We have a 25 joule charger out there because our goal is what Nick tells you to do, which is get something so powerful that they're really going to hesitate to test the fence.
I believe he uses this terrorism.
Yes.
That they should be like, if they touch it once, they should be like, never again, never no more. Right.
But if we had, instead of running that off batteries, if we were running that off electricity, it would be way better.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can figure out how to tap into your actual power rather than do solar systems, and then there are TVA power lines over the top part of the pasture, and when ours get out, it's because they're up there, and when they're up there, the shock is not as hard, and I'm pretty sure that's related to the electricity going through those lines.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how all that works. I do know that I saw Mark Shepard rapidly drop the receiver of a rotary laser level when we were down in a ditch, so we had it up about 10 foot. And he's, fuck that. Like, oh, so there is some exchange from those lines for damn sure.
Yeah. But really, we didn't know our full goal with them going in, other than I wanted more food security and my grass mowed. And so I hadn't made the decision about how much intervention, is it survival of the fittest and that's it. And so in that first year, we refined down, like I changed. So I was thinking no intervention. I had one get a brain infection, a ram. And I did, yeah. I gave him antibiotics. I waited 60 days. I processed him. And then that was meat for us here. That wasn't meat that we sold. Because again, that's, you know, $400 of meat that is not going in my freezer or going in my pocket. And that helped me clarify what the goal with the sheep is. And so it's gone from just sort of generally let's have sheep and mow the lawn to I want to raise them so that they bring in enough income to offset their cost.
Yeah.
Bring me a little bit extra and provide meat for us for the year in sheep. So that's made a big difference. And then it's easier to decide, you know, we had one with a prolapse, which means her vagina starts coming out, which is not good. And you can put a harness on them, get them through the pregnancy, have the baby. But they're very likely to have another prolapse in the future. So what they tell you to do is do that and then process the animal and then don't let the baby reproduce either. Well, okay. This was so early in the pregnancy. I was like, I'm looking at 5 months of a harness holding this in, right?
Okay.
And I was about to intervene and put it back in. And I was like, Nicole, this is at the perfect age to process. Let's process her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, those are things that are going to come up. And if you're going to raise sheep, you're going to have ones that are born with like weird leg things, or you'll have a prolapse problem, or they'll get bloat, or they can get listeria. And that's not fun. They can get a worm infection that you see too late. Like all, you will see them die in horrible ways and you will have to help them die.
So we mentioned a little bit about breeds, and I think hair sheep, most homesteaders have come to the conclusion that's the way to go. What breed did you select and why? Was it because that's what she had, or I mean?
When we found Dawn's sheep, which are St. Croix, I had already decided I wanted St. Croix, and I found this out by going to the farm down the road that does grass-fed commercially.
Okay.
And I asked her about what sheep she raised, and she said it was St. Croix because they do well in the heat here. They get through the winter fine. They are not as susceptible to the parasite load we have here. And she had started with wool sheep because she's a spinner.
Ah.
And it was just one intervention after another. So she went to St. Croix, and I just decided the locals know what's going on, right? So I started having feelers out, and I had seen advertised in our local area St. Croix sheep multiple times over the like 5 years before we got sheep. And of course, when you're ready for sheep, that advertisement isn't coming. So that's why we chose St. Croix. Other sheep that do well here are Katahdins. And I mean, you can get other ones. I think Dorpers would do fine here.
Yep.
But the sheep that will do fine in Tennessee may not do well in Minnesota, because you have a different climate there. It's a lot colder. And so I think like we chose those for here because everybody told me to raise them here. And when I finally found the right vet, she said, oh, I'm so glad you got this breed. They do really well here. And then she also told me that because of all the coal that was burnt in the area, that the vitamin needs were different because I'm trying to remember the what's the name of the vitamin that that would put in the ground. I'm having one of those podcaster brain farts.
I'm not sure either.
Sulfur. There's a lot of sulfur in the soil here because of that byproduct of coal burning. And so I don't need to augment that. And you know, meanwhile, I have this sulfur lick out that's been out for 3 months. Nobody's licked it. That's why.
Because they don't need it because they're getting enough of it. And that's a good case across the board with animals for free choice minerals. Clearly, they know what they need.
Yeah. So really, when it comes to breed, you may actually do well with a wool sheep. It's just you're going to have to shear them. It costs more to shear them than you're probably going to get for the wool unless you figure out how to leverage that into something. Either it's your hobby and then that's fine, or you figure out how to leverage it into this is the premium wool that was raised in a holler in, I don't know, Maine. And, you know, we fed them with chamomile infused water so that it would have a special, you know, like you have to go really premium for that to really pay off.
Yeah. What besides pasture do you really need to raise sheep? I mean, obviously if you don't have pasture, you're feeding them hay and that's expensive and doesn't work. So I think a lot of people are like, I got a lot of grass, good mixed Forbs grass, throw some sheep on it. They'll be happy.
Done.
I can tell you, like in Pennsylvania, when people have like 10 sheep and 20 acres that's well fenced, that's pretty much what they do. They just throw them out there like they're dogs and leave them alone and give them some protection from predators, and that works. But, you know, most of us are not 20 acres and, you know, 5 sheep. We're 3 acres and 15 sheep or something like that, and it takes a lot more effort to do.
Yeah. Basically, you need a place to have your sheep, and pasture is that place. If you don't have pasture, though, they can help you make the pasture.
Okay.
It like you saw my house when they first got here. You haven't seen the...
No, I haven't, and I want to.
Yeah, it's completely changed. I've done earthworks, so I'm struggling with post-earthworks recovery.
Yeah.
But they help with that. And the difference in pasture where we ran them, it had like scrub and... you know, elderberry and all sorts of those early pioneer plants coming in. That's all gone.
Oh, wow.
That's all gone.
That's great.
So, you know, in answer to your question, most people ask, how many acres per sheep do I need?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down that road online, you're going to get really frustrated because there's not an answer, because the answer is how good's your pasture. And the way to find that out is to start rotating sheep on your pasture and see if they thrive or if you have to add things. So then we're going to go to the add things. Let's say you have a 5-acre homestead and you bring 10 sheep in and your pasture is not very good. What you're going to end up doing is giving them hay, definitely minerals. And probably even on that scenario you said, Jack, you're going to give them minerals anyway, because there's something missing in that soil. I find that training sheep to come is helpful. So sheep treats. We use Timothy pellets as sheep treats. They get them every night a little bit. In Tennessee, we have flies that come. So a little bit of pine tar on their back helps the flies not land. And then if your goal is to partially, monetize it and get the beef from it, you may need vitamin shots to get them over a stressor. You may decide you need ivermectin for worming.
Mm-hmm.
You probably want a way to transport them. It's not in the back of your Subaru, although you probably could do that. Put the tarp down because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're cheap, and they don't care. They do what they got to do.
You don't need a lot, though.
Now, Preston says, as far as the sheep treats, some of his AB were quite wild, too. He found that Fig Newtons were those wild sheep's kryptonite. So apparently Fig Newtons are a highly preferable... sheep treat, I guess. I would not have thought. I mean, I actually would like to know what made a person think, I know, I'll get a Fig Newton and feed it to my sheep. But apparently, whatever it is, it worked.
That is sheep specific. We have a sheep named Bruni who is from the original flock, and she's been a little standoffish, except for when she's near the end of her pregnancy. If I have sheep treats, she will eat them out of my hand because she's like I want more nourishment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently her kryptonite is animal crackers. So I have this giant bag of animal crackers. I was like, yes, I'm going to do this. It's only her kryptonite. Everybody else is like, I could take them or leave them. So I'm totally going to try Fig Newtons next because, you know, being able to handle your sheep really helps.
Tom said Fig Newton's drinking was probably involved. So he's probably drunk. I see the sheep here, Newton. Holy shit. Yeah. I know one other thing they do eat from Greg, and that is that they will eat dog kibble.
Oh, yeah, that's a
and
problem.
And that's why if you have the dogs on the pasture with them, you have to set up these things the dogs can get in, but the sheep can't. Or all of a sudden your dog that never eats a sheep, you come and they've eaten. Because, you know, we're different. You're probably out there every day at least putting eyes on the sheep. Those big ranchers, they might be out a week before they come back to move that herd. And all of a sudden there's a couple sheep gone and the dog's got blood on his face because he's a Pyrenees and you can see it. And this dog that never kills sheep, he's fucking starving. Because that's what he said when he first made that mistake. They ate all the dog kibble. And when the dog's like, well, you ate my food, so I only have one other choice here because I ain't going to sit here and not eat. So it's amazing what they'll eat. Because I would have never in my life thought a sheep would eat dog's kibble, but apparently so.
Oh, yeah. We've been struggling with that the whole time. We have made the electric dog feeding thing where the sheep find out it's electric and then we let the dogs in. We've used Greg Judy's design and it failed. Here's the problem with sheep is they don't read books or watch YouTube.
Yep.
So our sheep are capable of crawling on their bellies into a feeding area and contorting up to get the dog food, particularly when they're young and skinny. So now what we're doing is feeding the dogs every night and watching them eat and keeping the sheep off. I think this winter we'll go back to the mobile dog feeding house thing when everybody's just a little bit bigger. Because it was when the little ones were there that we started having the problem. And then the adults are like, well, I want to try that. It's the same thing. They teach each
other. Again, they mimic and they learn, man. That's what animals do.
Yeah.
What's your yield been like? And you mentioned money and want to make a little bit of money off it, at least to pay for it. So how's the yield and the profit worked out for you?
So the first year was not great because of the lack of rain. Yeah. And we got a few babies. But now last year we had 4 ewes pregnant. And the yield from them was about $3,500 in meat. Which is not bad. I'm going to have 4 rams processed next week, and that will give me about 350 pounds of meat. I will sell one of those rams, and then the rest are here. We go through 4 sheep a year, about. That's our volume on the homestead.
So that's what you consume. So anything beyond that, you can sell.
Yeah. And if I was in optimal production, they'd be giving me sheep twice a year. The reason we only have 4 though is that we're only processing the boys this time. We're leaving the girls to reproduce. So we ended up with 4 boys and 5 girls out of this year. So then now I've got 5 more who can reproduce, which will probably give us another 9 or 10.
Okay.
So we'll go quickly from getting, you know, 10 new ones a year to getting 20 and then 30. You don't want to do that in your first year, but scaling out makes a big difference. And, you know, going through a couple birthing cycles, I've learned that process as well. And the ideal is you have your sheep on a schedule so that birthing season happens in the same 3-week period of time.
So everybody's dropping and then your harvest is on.
Yeah, so you don't sleep much during that time. And it's dumb because I should just let them do it, but I don't. Yeah. I'm like, are you okay?
yeah. Like you said, the smaller your herd, the more important it is to try to keep everybody functional. Even if you mark somebody and say, okay, you don't get to make babies, you still want to get them to the end of that cycle if you can.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention is we put in way more time than we thought we were going to. Probably 20 hours a week on this project. Of tactical time.
Is that 30. Still now, or was that like in the beginning and now that you've refined it out, you've kind of pushed it down some?
So in the beginning, it was a full-time plus job for him. And here's why. our pasture does not look like normal pasture. It's hilly, it's rocky, and it's hard to deal with. And then the fences kept failing, so there was a lot of going back over and putting more grounding posts in.
Yeah.
We've refined it down to about 20 hours a week.
Okay.
With the rotating. So if you have nice flat pasture with topsoil and your sheep are scared of being shocked, you'll be fine. Yeah, mine are actually scared.
That are on the video, but when she says hilly, this is what she means. She doesn't mean this. Yeah, this is the best it gets. And there are places where you can almost reach out and touch the ground when you're walking up, which the sheep don't care, but it makes everything you do to maintain them harder. And think about jumping. When you have an animal that wants to jump, and even they have like that much slope and they're 2-3 foot off the fence, there's not a lot of altitude left, right? All they have to do is just a simple hop and they're over. Where if it's flat and you have, let's say, a 4-foot electric fence or electronet, they have to clear 4 foot. Where when you have that slope and they're on the downside of it, they have to clear what, 2, 18 inches?
Yeah. I mean,
that's nothing for a sheep.
No.
And they look goofy like they can't jump, but those bastards can jump.
Oh, they can jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can jump. They can crawl under it. If they're scared, they'll crawl under it and take the shock, too.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, things that scare sheep. You, lightning, cars driving by, dogs barking, anything that looks different. They're a lot like ducks that way.
Big nuts falling out of the tree. You know, the wind shifted rapidly. The dog ran differently than he did yesterday. I mean, they're not exactly brave animals.
Yeah. So that's something that when we talk about backyard meat production and having a full-time job, can you do that and have sheep? Yes. Are you going to be rotating your sheep every 3 days? Maybe, maybe not. Because the other way people raise sheep is they build a hard fenced sheep pasture with a little barn, mm-hmm. and they feed them, you know, sheep rations and hay, and they just sort of overgraze that area and they throw carbon down if it turns into a mud pit, and they raise plenty of meat that way.
Yeah.
But they have to source the hay from somewhere else. However, what they're not doing, what adds the time, is that rotating them to keep the parasite load off and to improve the ground.
What I've seen done as a hybrid too is kind of like the wagon wheel design for chicken. Where like maybe you give the sheep an acre, you have a relatively small herd on an acre, and then you hard fence that acre and you cross fence it into, let's say, 6 paddocks, and they rotate them through those paddocks with like a laneway. And then, like you said, they're adding carbon and whatever. And if they have enough that they can cut kind of their own, let's call it fresh hay, they're bringing them a supplement that way. And that way I don't have to do this hard thing, and I don't have to try to do that to 10 acres. That's a lot of infrastructure on 10 acres.
Yeah.
But again, all these people have these simple ideas. Come here where it is flat, but you can only go that deep before you hit rock, or go to Nicole's where it's steep like this. You can go a little bit deeper and you still hit lots of rock.
Yeah. You'll be digging up rocks, but that's the thing, is you can make it easier on yourself than we have made it here, because we're also using them to improve the land on purpose. And that's their byproduct, right, is that better things grow. Like the difference in fertility on my land is amazing since they've been here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to be the next time I get up there and see what they've done for you. So all of this is done because either we're going to sell a product that somebody's going to eat, or we're going to take the product and eat it ourselves. So I know you like to cook. You're like me. You're kind of a foodie. What are some of your favorite lamb recipes?
My absolute favorite are the lamb chops, which is not a surprise.
Yeah.
And that's just to go rare on them with a sear and some garlic, salt, and rosemary and pepper, which is very, very easy. So you just, I mean, in fact, if you have a sous vide, you can bring them up to like 130 or so on your sous vide and forget they're there for an hour or two while you're doing other things, and then sear it off. That works as long as the lamb is under about a year old.
Okay.
The older ones, the meat to me is too tough.
Okay.
And the more I have lamb,
where we're talking mutton, how does your cooking change?
That's low and slow then, or grind them.
Yeah.
Like the last ram. So we did, if an animal keeps getting out of the fence and is teaching others to get out of the fence, here they move. to another, because we're working across four properties.
Yeah.
They move to another property till we're ready to process them. And what I've learned is if the animal is over a year old, which a ram, if we're using him for reproduction, is, then they become mostly ground.
Yeah.
Like the easiest thing to keep it tender is to grind them. They'll have a little bit stronger flavor. So you're going to be pairing strong flavors like cumin, garlic, rosemary is a favorite there. Shawarma seasonings, which is like a mix, or curries do really well with that. And then you just cook it like normal. You do with ground beef, only it's ground lamb. Make them into meatballs. They're delicious. Sheep sausage, absolutely, Jack. But the other thing I love to do is a leg. And the way I do the leg is I cut slits in it and put whole garlic cloves in it. And then I just roast it in the oven with a rub on there, usually of salt. I always add rosemary because I just love rosemary. So salt, pepper, rosemary, same thing. And when you slice into it, you get like little cross slices of garlic,
the garlic,
which is delicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? What do you do with lamb?
Pretty much all of that. One of my favorite things is the arm chops that are more like steaks. Like, I don't raise them, so I don't get the pleasure of eating this stuff very often. But when I'm buying from a store, and it's kind of the easy button for grass-fed, because if you're eating lamb in the United States, it's probably from New Zealand or Australia, and it's like 99% likely that it's 100% grass-fed. They're just not haying or CAFOing lamb. And those arm chops, to me, are like a sweet spot because they're tender. You know, from a lamb, not from a mutton, but from a lamb, they're really tender, and they're like half the price of buying chops. But I cook deer pretty much. I've cooked sheep and lamb pretty much when I cook deer. And like the leg and all, I know you said like the older sheep would be called mutton, you know, grinded or whatever. But there is nothing that low and slow long enough doesn't make tender. Right. So I'll take an older sheep roast and I'll just slow cook that sucker, or, you know, give it 12 hours in sous vide. Give it 12 hours at 135 degrees, and it will be freaking tender. Right? If you give it 2 hours in a sous vide, it will not be tender. And if you're getting kind of out there and you're doing things like hawks from an older animal, you know, you're looking at more like 24 hours. But you can turn anything into butter if you leave it long enough. And then the key with that is when you start playing with sous vide, people say you can't overcook it. Yeah, but you can.
Yeah, you
can. So you'll never turn something, like you'll never put a piece of beef in there at 135 degrees and end up well done. That I agree with. But the reason it gets more tender is that texture starts to break down. And if you go too far with that concept, you get this mushy, mealy, even if it's still pink, not good thing. Like the sous vide everything guy, Guga, he did like I think he did a brisket for like 30 days. Not a good idea. He's like, yeah, don't do this. So you'll dial that in for yourself. As you know, I brought home like about half a sheep from John Willis's at SRF. I haven't cooked any of it yet, but I think I'm going to take one of the roasts and do that with it for Thanksgiving. So I have like a turkey, a sheep roast, and a deer roast going on. And then I'll probably eat all the sheep and deer myself, and my family will be like, I don't know about that, whatever. Here, eat your turkey.
Too bad we're not neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or David's not next door. He'd probably eat that too.
I don't know if David's ever cooked a turkey for Thanksgiving, other than the year he raised the royal palm himself. Like he has a weird Thanksgiving ritual. Everything on the table has to have been bartered, foraged, or raised. He will not use anything from a store or whatever. Unless you bought it at a store and he bartered for it, that's like the loophole. It's a weird loophole. So he was like over here yanking daikons out of my garden a couple of years ago and making pickled daikon to go on it and whatever, because that's foraged and borrowed or bartered or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, like some people don't like that. You mentioned like a stronger flavor in like an older sheep. There is a certain flavor to the fat in lamb and sheep. I like it. To me, it's what some people call gamey, but as we've discussed before, gamey is not a flavor. Gamey means somebody fucks something up. That's what that means. There's no gamey. Like if you go look at the model of the human tongue, right? And all the taste buds, you know, bitter, sour, sweet, spicy, right? Umami. There's no gamey taste buds. It's not a flavor. It's a code for somebody who didn't like the way something tasted. But I guess that would be the best descriptor you could give. It has something that some would call a gamey flavor, but I think in a very good way. And then it's about pairings, right? What are you pairing it with? Like, you know, people make shepherd's pie with beef all the time, and like, well, that's not what shepherds do.
No, we like, make so it here the right way.
It's shepherd's pie, you know, and if you don't want to do carbs, then, you know, do like cauliflower mash on it. Just cook the stink up. For God's sakes, people, if you're going to play with cauliflower, please cook the stink out of the cauliflower, right? Like, I tried it and I didn't like it. Did you cook the stink out? What's that mean? So, no.
No.
You gotta cook the smell and the moisture out of cauliflower. But I've done shepherd's pie with cauliflower topping, and it's friggin' fantastic. Or you don't have to have potatoes. That's just to make the whole thing cheaper. That's the real reason, right? Because Ireland, they had potatoes everywhere until they didn't. And then they all died. That's a lesson. Eat the sheep without the potatoes. You'll be much better off. So there's a lot of things you can do with it. And I love stew. Like, again, you cook anything slow and low long enough, it gets tender. So the hack there, when you don't know how long, like, your cubed up meat is going to take to get tender, don't put any of your vegetables in. Like, your mirepoix is fine, but like your finishing vegetables, the things you want in there, leave that out until it's getting tender. That way you don't end up with like your potatoes or your carrots just becoming mush. And so lamb stew, sheep stew, fuck yeah, man, I'll tear that up.
Yeah, any of it does well in that environment. And in fact, if you like to cook with ground beef, you can substitute ground lamb for anything. We have ground lamb tacos here. I made meatloaf on accident out of lamb once from an unlabeled bag, and it was delicious, and I would have done it anyway. Lamb burgers, not hamburgers. Well, you know, if you don't hate how lamb tastes, which I don't, it's delicious. And the other thing is that wool sheep have stronger meat flavor than the St. Croix. So they take, like, I don't have to castrate the males and worry about any of that coming in. And all of that makes it way easier.
I have to say, I've had Dorper raised in South Texas, and it's very difficult for me to differentiate between a Dorper sheep and venison.
Yeah.
Now, they're also, like, literally living in the same place, eating the same food, you know, and everybody in South Texas that has a ranch is selling hunting. So the deer are being fed corn. The sheep really aren't, but they're living on the same sagebrush and stuff like that. And when it's produced in the same area, side by side, I'm pretty good at picking out flavors. And I probably could do it if you told me and said, you know, beat the 50-50 odds for the same cut. I probably could. If you put it in front of me and told me this was deer or this was lamb, I probably wouldn't call you on it. I'd probably be like, that's the same to me.
Yeah, that's why I serve lamb at every workshop.
Yeah. Because
a lot of people haven't tasted it, and it can taste delicious. And then that gives you a whole other thing in your backyard you can raise, right?
I found with my picky family that they love things when I don't tell them what they are. And then they're like, no, but I don't like that. But you just ate it, and you went on for 2 fucking hours about how amazing it was. Well, it's an exception. No, you didn't know. So your brain didn't tell you you hated it. That's all. But that wears out. Then they don't trust you anymore. Like, well, what is it? It's meat. And they know what that means right away. Like, I'm not going to lie to them, but it's also only a half-truth or whatever. But, yeah.
And I haven't tried lamb biltong yet, but that's in the future.
I've never done biltong. I've never done jerky with lamb. I've done sausage, but I've never done a straight lamb sausage. I've always, like, mixed it with something, like, threw a little bit of pork in it for some that lusciousness of pork fat. Like, that really helps with the sausage. But I've done, like, 80% lamb, 20% pork. I've done 80% lamb, like 20% feral hog, and, you know, with heavy back fat trimming off of that for the fat, that's worked out really well. But I've never done a biltong from lamb or sheep. I don't know that I will either. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Let's go ahead and take this question right away because we're talking about cooking. Joshua says, what's your preferred set of herbs and spices when preparing lamb? You mentioned rosemary. Like, rosemary and lamb, boom, that's like tomatoes and basil. Like, they just, peanut butter and jelly, like, that goes together. But I like thyme and rosemary together with lamb flavorings, and I like mint with lamb. What, you got any additions to that?
Yeah, I've absolutely done all of those. Garlic.
Garlic. Just, yeah, garlic.
Always, turn up the garlic and the black pepper. Cumin's okay with it. Cumin with a paprika with a little bit of, so this is going to be a little unusual, a little bit of clove.
Okay.
Is a whole different flavor profile. It's delicious. Jack's like, oh, I can taste that in my head right now.
Yeah, I can. Well, what I'm making is raw salt and nut, which is that they do the, can't think of what they're called, the tagine. Like the tagine lamb is made with a seasoning called raw salt and nut that has clove and it has turmeric and it has a lot of other things in it. And it's like 28 ingredients. And I like making my own. And when I'm going to do that, it's just like, fuck that. I'll just buy it pre-mixed because there's mace in it. There's, you know, so many different things in it that I would only use little bits of that it's not worth buying in bulk and mixing. But if you've never done like a slow cooked lamb tagine style, you don't have to have a tagine. It helps. You can do it just in a crock pot. Holy crap. And that's like break the carb thing and finish it with some potatoes in it and let all that juice go into the potato and fuck it. It's one day a year or so. That I forgot all about doing that till this subject came up. But tagine cooking with lamb, it's like literally it was made to cook lamb. That's what it's for. It's for lamb and goat.
Yeah. There's a thing called a Romertopf, which does the same kind of cooking as that, that now I'm going to have to do that probably for Christmas.
Yeah. Tagine lamb and aroma cooker or whatever you say.
Yeah, that thingy.
For those that don't know what tagine is, it's like, so you have this, like, it almost looks like the dish that made out of clay that goes under your flower pot so water doesn't go everywhere. And then it's got like a cone that sits on top of it and everything sits inside there. And I did, I think the first time I ever did a tagine cook, I did lamb and I did, from a recipe, dried apricots with that. And that was like, I'm like, I don't know about apricots and lamb. And like, and then you're reading this thing and it's like, this is this very traditional Moroccan thing. It's like, back to when people have done something for hundreds of years and they tell you it works, yes, it works. And I've also done quail in a tagine. That's in with the Ras El Hanout seasoning. That was one of my T-Spaz items that didn't sell. Like I did a video of how to tagine cook and everything. I'm like, people are gonna buy this shit. Like two bought it. Like that shit is like, you can't even explain to somebody the flavor and the depth of that. Now, if you're a person that, like, if you smell like a curry type dish, you just immediately turn off because of the turmeric and all, you probably won't like it. But otherwise, it's like a very mild curry. It's not spicy at all. I should say it's not hot in spice at all.
Yes, it has a lot of flavor. Do you with the pot, do you soak it in water before you put
tagine itself? Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, that's exactly like a Romertopf. It's just a different shape.
Yeah. It'll fracture if it can, like I should say, it can fracture if you don't. And usually when I tagine cook, I use the gas grill and I just indirect heat.
Oh, okay.
Instead of put it in the oven. It works out really, really well. It's very similar. I actually, since I have like a 6-burner grill, I put the two end burners on and set it in the center.
Yeah, I go in the oven, but I turn the oven on with it in there.
Okay,
and
so
then
it comes
raise
up.
It up every 15 minutes, another 50 degrees.
Yeah. Do you know where they started? These things are in these bathhouses where they in the Middle East, where they have like these hot baths that you go take and they use a fire to create the hot water. And so like you bring your food in and they stick it in a tagine. Then you go take your bath. And when you're done, your food's ready. But you bring your own food. Like that's where that whole thing. I love it's where it's like I doubt that's the first time somebody did it, but that's like the big thing keeping the whole tradition alive now is these bathhouses with this fire and shit. And like, so you're soaking in this big ass freaking hot tub basically while your lamb or your whatever is your goat or whatever is cooking in a tagine. Like maybe people's lives aren't as bad as we think in other countries. Like that doesn't sound like too rough of an end of a day right there. You know, curried lamb with figs and dates or something. And you know, while you take a hot tub bath, that's, you know, of course,
they have time to do it.
And they have time to do it. Yeah. Let's talk about some other things too. We'll take some Q&A here in a second, but Christmas is coming. And then whenever Christmas is coming, it's like, what do I get somebody for Christmas? I bet you have an idea of what people can get.
I'm exploding with energy now. Okay. I'm channeling my inner Andy McCann. HollerRoast.com has great gift ideas for you. And something we have new this year. So we do sampler packs that come in a little gift bag, and you can order those at hollyroast.com. And we can gift wrap anything. But we have Jack's Bourbon Cool that actually sourced a second bag of those beans. So now I have 70 pounds back in stock between now and Christmas. And that is a bean that Jack and I developed together where I use bourbon to cool it, which brings out more of the sweet flavors. My preferred roast level for that is dark. Is that yours now too?
It is. We started out with blonde because it bourbon, blonde, cool, blonde, bourbon, cool sounded really cool and all. It is good, but the darker roast brings out more of the flavor in it.
Yeah, and that's a Sumatran bean. Typically, people like it a little darker. It has an earthier flavor when it's at a medium roast.
Yeah.
But we're launching this year the BB, the Hollyroast BB, which is the bean barrel. It's a tin that is branded, and it comes with the beans inside it. Or if you like K-cups, we have a square tin that has the K-cups inside it. So that's all ready to go as a gift as well. That's all over at hollyroast.com.
And what's BB? Bourbon blend?
Bean barrel.
Bean barrel.
It's a bean barrel. Yeah, the tins are arriving at my house today. I'd be holding one up right now, but
so it's just have them in great. It's not like a special roast or anything.
No, you can have any coffee you want. So it comes base level $35 with you choose your roast level and if it's ground or not. And then that's a standard hollow roast house. If you want a premium upgrade, I think it's $5 more, and you can tell me which single source coffee you want. If you want the Honduras, if you want Jack's in there, that's an upgrade for that. Okay. And then you can give that as a gift to your family, or you can just keep it. It is it has a gasket on it, so it keeps coffee fairly well as well. So you can just leave it on your shelf to hold your beans.
The gift of coffee short term, and the gift of coffee storage long term.
Long term, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
And you've got some other crap going on there. Like, there's all these people out there that are really busy and not getting shit done, and they want to get shit done, and they get all dislocated, and they come in and they say, I'm going to do this thing, and then they go to do the thing, and they see the other thing, and they chase the other thing, and then they chase another thing, and they chase. And by the end of the day, the one thing that they needed to do is undone, or worse, it's 20% done. And even though you did 20% of it, because you didn't finish it, you actually have to start over. So you wasted the time you did the 20% in, and now you have to do the whole thing tomorrow. And then tomorrow, the shiny thing over there, and then they just never get it done. So you actually have a whole program for people like that. And I find a lot of entrepreneurs are people like that, because what gives us power is our initiative, but it also gives us the autism disappearing act or something, the way you put it. It was like
the ADHD eraser.
The ADHD eraser.
The ADHD eraser.
Like, it's gone. So what is your solution for people that are dealing with that in their lives? Because there's a lot of us.
What happens when you get motivated to change your life and build a life you choose on your terms is you get excited about it. And then you start these projects. And usually we start more than one project as we're doing it. And you end up in this place where everything feels important and everything feels like it needs to be done at one time. And that happened to me. That's how this even started is, you know, how do you get all the stuff done, Nicole? Well, I don't get all the stuff down. I choose my priorities. And it boiled down to me for setting a life vision and purpose, which I know sounds really cliche.
Yeah.
But it works, especially if you use plain language words and not a bunch of business buzzwords on that. And then having very clear areas of focus for the next 18 months. Like, in order to be successful at my life, I need to take the sheep, which were a learning project, and turn it into something that monetizes so that they're not costing money every year anymore. And so that's one of my specific things, big picture business unit developments that I'm doing. And then I back out from there, and every day I make a list of everything that needs to be done with never more than three things, my three things to keep me going. And I do that because your brain can keep track of three things easily. And if you have four or five, or if you're worrying about, is my mint patch growing, or I need to get the watercress before tonight's freeze, or any of these things, it helps keep you focused and helps build small steps every day so that you make big outcomes, which is how we get Self-Reliance Festival done. It's how Hollow Roast was built. And it's actually how I got that swim spa that is now in my yard. So in order to help people get this together, I decided at your workshop I was going to do a webinar on January 9th called My Three Things. If they go to NicoleSoss.com, you can sign up for it. It's 6 p.m. It'll go about 2.5 hours where we walk together through how to develop that life strategic plan so that you can focus in on the overwhelm. And the best part about doing a webinar like this is the other people on the webinar are in the same place you are. And what has come out of every one of these webinars are some sort of a mastermind group that hold each other accountable moving forward. Because you'll come out of that, you'll have a poorly written life plan. And then you're going to spend this while making it a well-written life plan for yourself that you want to read every day. So that's the My Three Things webinar. I invite everybody to come on out January 9th. NicoleSoss.com is where you sign up for that.
And you will forget. I promise you, between January 9th and now, or now and January 9th, see, I already screwed it up, we have this thing called Thanksgiving. And then we have, like, the whole Christmas season. And then we have Christmas. And then we have that delta in between Christmas and New Year's where most people, even if they have to work, don't actually do anything. And then we have, like, the massive hangover experience of New Year's Eve. And then the 9th comes, and you won't remember. But there's a solution to that problem, Nicole, so they don't forget. What is that solution?
The solution right now is to go to NicoleSoss.com and sign up today, because you're going to get email reminders. I'm going to tell you it's coming. I promise to not be up in your face about it, but I will remind you. I also do send out some things you could, like questions you can ask yourself before ever even arriving, so that you're better equipped to get ready for the webinar. So definitely do that. And, you know, if you're not driving, text yourself or a friend at NicoleSoss.com so that when you come home and see that unread text message, you're like, oh yeah, I got to go do the thing. But really, if you have a phone and you have internet, I'm asking for your name and email. I'm not asking for how many kids you have. I'm not asking for your mailing address. I'm not asking for much information. It's just enough that I can call you by. You can make up a name. I don't care. But so that I know what to call.
You'll never know.
Yeah, I'm not cross-referencing you to a CIA database with that. So definitely get it done. And if you can't show up on January 9th, it's recorded. You have access to the recording for 7 days.
Awesome. Awesome. And I think everybody should do that, especially if you have the experience with, I'm going to go in the kitchen and do the thing. And then I know I do all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the grocery store with a list. The list originated with one fucking thing that I need from the only reason I went, that one thing. I come out with everything on the list, 5 other fucking things, and not the one thing that I went for. And my hack for that now is if I go to the store for one thing, it goes to the top, it gets a bold, and I don't give a shit if it's completely discombobulated, I go get that thing first. That's literally the only way I can prevent that from happening to me. So we got some more questions coming in.
I use the Cozy app for that because it comes off the list when I've gotten it, so I can not taken on the list. Yeah.
Here's my problem. What I do is I'm going not because I want a thing, because somebody else wants a thing.
I know
and
who
the way that happens is she sends me the things in a text message, and then 4 or 5 more things appear in the text message on the way to the store, and then the thing at the top. But I like the idea of the disappearing list.
You can share the Cozy app.
We are going to find
family.
It. I was not aware of the Cozy app. And that way, can she append to my list?
Yes.
Ah.
And it just shows up.
That is the solution. So let's take some questions. Jim, who we both know, says, which electric fence manufacturers do you recommend?
Boy, should I know that off the top of my head, and I don't, and Tactical's not here.
I bet Tactical
will. So we have tested, we used to use the Premier fences. They break about every 2 years.
Yep, my experience.
And so now I'm on to a new brand, which I may have in just a second. So let's put that question on hold while so we have lists. We have gone through maybe 10 different kinds of step-in posts, different strands, different reels. And I have a whole list of these things.
Okay.
Sorry.
Preston says, not really a question, but you were talking about the cherry. He said, wilted cherry leaves, frosted Sudan, and Johnson grass will kill a ruminant. I don't know if cherry does it for the same reason the Johnson grass does and the Sudan, but in that case, it's actually cyanide. And yeah, I've seen very, you know, reports by very experienced ranchers who grazed those types of things at the wrong time and lost animals. And these are not, you know, people like us that are just trying to figure it out. Like, they know what they're, certain things I think you're better off just not using if you're going to be doing this, because the timing is really, really important with them. Jake actually asked a question. That's actually a question instead of 19 suggestions that aren't really questions. Have you ever considered like doing these 10 things? No, he actually says, can you cover if you're starting up a new herd? What is the minimum of each you need to have a solid start? I think he means like female and male.
You need two sheep to start because sheep don't like being alone. And if I wanted to know how to work it out, I wouldn't have a male. I'd probably get two females so that I don't end up with extras without strategically ending up with extras. And so if you're starting a new herd, get two females and then see how much they eat through and how their condition is. If it looks like they're holding condition, bring in a male to visit for a short time. And then
away. He can be borrowed or rented, right? His services.
Exactly. Or just have it in for a month and then take him to the processor. And then he got meat too. I actually, if somebody, I just got an email from a guy, John Davis, who says he had a ram for me that I haven't answered because I'm thinking. Because I actually do want a ram, but I'm using a ram right now. So I need to figure out if I want to keep a ram.
Which ram do you want?
Yeah, so the way we do it is we're processing all our males because we don't like keeping a ram. Because there's the separating and the putting back together and the separating and they got out and then you have unexpected pregnancies with how our fencing works. If you have flat property, this is less of a problem. This is just a symptom of where we live here.
Sure.
And so, yeah. So we bring them in and then the idea is process them or they go on to another place.
So if you had an easier management system, you could just basically say, estrus is coming, males have to go get secluded, and then they can come back when they can't make babies.
Yeah. Okay. Cyclops is the fence charger we've been using that's done so well. I'm going to send some links to you in the chat for people. Okay. I just know that we went through five different ones, and I couldn't remember. These guys sent me one that was the wrong one. Okay, so we needed a 12-volt. They sent 110 Cyclops, and I called them, and I ended up getting they replaced it immediately and rushed it out like next day. And because of that, I also love their customer service.
Can you drop that link for the fence?
Telegram?
Yeah, something like that. I think the reason it's not working as a hot link in the chat is that the H in HTTP is attached to the R in Energizer.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I can't cut and paste out of here, and I want to make sure I put that in the show notes.
Yeah, I can send you the whole list of all the recommendations.
Yeah, just send it to me when we're done. Yeah. I'm not going to be like sprinting to.
No, what I've got are like the fencing that we like to use. I've got which reels. So there are geared reels that you use to pull the fencing out.
Okay.
And some work better than others. And we have a list of three that work best and one that Tactical likes the best. And he's pretty picky but they have like pros and cons. So he's been starting to build some different sorts of
cheap database.
Like videos about that. Yeah.
Okay. Tactical says, never buy a solar charger, buy a 12-volt charger and a deep cycle battery. So I guess that's what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Literally swapping batteries out then?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can charge that battery with a solar panel, but if you buy the solar charger and one part of it breaks, all of it's broken.
Mm-hmm.
For me, depending on if they hook up power over at the 12-volt location, I don't know how Tactical will feel about this, but I'm thinking we want to go 110 there if it's easy to tap into the power.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then insulators that you get. So posts, insulators, and the wire strand that you get at Tractor Supply off the shelf work in an emergency.
But yeah, I mean, don't do it unless it's an emergency.
You want to get specific things.
Okay. As far as your fence issues go, have you tried positive negative hookup instead of earth grounding?
The only way I can answer that, because I'm not the one who's done that, is by tactical walking in this room. But you mean positive negative on a 110 service?
Yeah, that's what he really means, is you're already grounded. So,
you know. Yeah, but it's not on the 12 volt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But that doesn't mean it wouldn't.
I mean, even if you did it, you still have to ground it. There's wherever it comes from, somewhere it has to go to ground.
So the ground is what develops, like what delivers the wallop. And so here on my property, we do have grounding rods. The problems we have had with the fence here have more to do with insects and tree branches than the shock not working. It's over on that battery operated place
there. Yeah. So one thing just might help people, not necessarily with sheep and when you're mobile, but we had a duck holding area and we had about 150 ducks, and we didn't want to lock them in the coop with that many birds because, well, gross. So we started having some problems with foxes and shit. And so we ring the whole holding area with hot wire and getting a rod in the ground 4 feet here. Is you can just forget about that. Not that it would do any good if you did, because rock doesn't make the best transmitter ground. So the place we did it, we could go about 10 inches. So what we did is we took the last 10 inches of the rod and we bent it, and then we laid it horizontal on the ground, and then we just made sure that that area was always damp. Like in the middle of our summers, we would just kind of water that area a little bit once in a while, and it worked really good. And I saw a fox. It was a 25-mile box. And you know how big my holding area is. And I saw a fox literally pinwheel backwards. That was pretty gratifying to see that happen.
I'm sure it was. Well, and so Tactical's running aluminum hard fencing all around the places where we don't ever need to take it back down now.
Okay.
That's been a huge time saver.
Yeah.
Like it's a pain in the neck the first time, but then it's done every time and you're just tapping into that. Got it. Right.
Jeremy says, does it fit inside the grill, and do you leave the lid open, or do you have to leave the lid open? He's talking about tagines. It'll fit inside a grill, unless you have like a really shallow grill. They're about, I'd say they're about, the top's about a foot, 14 inches tall, and a standard size tagine. So your standard Weber grill, gas grill, will have no trouble. Weber kettle will fit too, but it has to be in the center. So you have to kind of do the ring of charcoal if you want to indirect in a Weber kettle. Triple, not really a question, it's a statement. I add allspice to lamb stool. Yes, do that. In fact, put allspice in many things.
Allspice is delicious.
I did pickled jalapenos for our bagel bar that we had on Thursday morning, and one of those was, you know, one of the hacks with that was a handful of whole allspice berries into the pickled jalapenos. So that even mattered, even with all that flavor of the jalapeno. Angie says, any concerns about heat and the plastic sous vide bags? Not for me.
I don't have that concern. If you have that concern, you can sous vide in mason jars.
Or silicone. They make the silicone bags that are reusable, but I mean, I wouldn't go trying to sous vide inside a Ziploc bag, maybe. But like the ones that we buy for our vac sealers, I mean, your food's in there sometimes for a year in the freezer. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, if you are just a Nazi about plastic exposure, that's not the sous vide's not the device for you.
No. Because like I said, you can do the silicone, but I've never found that those really form as well around the food. And the key with the sous vide is, since you're transferring heat from the water through the membrane into the meat, is you don't want a lot of airspace in there. I guess if you were doing like a, you said mason jar, so if it was full of liquid itself, then you got a good transfer. But if you have airspace, first your shit floats. And second, you don't get the heat transfer you're looking for.
Yeah.
Hudson says, do sheep do okay with pond water as their water source?
It depends on your pond. Yeah. My sheep have access to a pond in one paddock that is spring fed, so it's always cleaning out.
Yeah.
And a pond as a water source is fine as long as there's not a pathogen in there that's bad for sheep. Most of the time, the sheep get the spring water delivered to them in 5-gallon jugs. If I could change one thing about that pasture down there, it would have water run to different strategic places, which like Joel Salatin would say, it's a huge waste of our time to be running 5-gallon jugs up and down the hill. He's not wrong. We also don't have like a 10-year lease there. If there was a 10-year lease, it would probably be worth investing in running some of those pipes.
Yeah.
But we could be asked to leave with 30 days notice at any time.
Yeah.
And so we are, there are plans for my place to run some water to some of the back areas, because that's something when you're going to have sheep, if you're going to be rotating them, to the extent that you can put in that kind of infrastructure, you're going to have a much easier time. Unless you just have a creek running through your property, and then you're good to go.
I've never actually done this, but I don't see why it wouldn't work if you have a background with equipment. When we were in cable television, we used to use a tool called a vibe plow, and it would take, and it's much more fragile than PEX, right? And this plow will actually, like, as it goes, it cuts this little crack in the ground, and you set the depth, you have the cable on a reel, and it will literally, like, all you have to do when you're done is you just drive along it to kind of shut the it's not a trench. It's sort of like stitching it into the ground. And I think if you can get a hold of a vibe plow without like needing some kind of corporate insurance or something, it should run PEX beautifully. And I've until you said that, and I was thinking about, wow, how, that's a lot of pipe to bury. And I think you can probably vibe plow in PEX, and that would be like the easy button and relatively inexpensive, because it's going to cost less than true pipe, and you just need water to get there. You can accumulate like with a float valve in a tank or something.
Yes.
All right, let's go on. Your mother says, related to Jake's, what exactly are the perils of just keeping a ram with your ewes? I mean, if pregnancies happen off schedule, is that necessarily bad? Well, that's a person that's probably never dealt with ewes dropping out of schedule.
I had this time two get pregnant who should not have been pregnant, because they were younger than I want. So they were capable of getting pregnant, but younger than I wanted them to. One is the one we processed with that prolapse.
Okay.
The other one gave birth fine. And then a third one that I would have held off another couple months, who never dilated, and I pulled those and they died.
Okay.
So the problem with having a ram free with your sheep, it's a choice you're making about survival of the fittest. You're going to have more ewes with pregnancy problems or delivery problems.
Yeah.
And then if you're not just going to let them die, you either have to shoot them or you have to do something.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like literally going to be up to here in a sheep. You wouldn't think your arm would fit, but that's how far in I had to go.
Mm.
She lived without any antibiotics afterwards to recover. She did okay. Yeah. But I regret that that had to happen. And she's the one who is now the most skittery, because I don't think that felt good when I did this. It's like we caught her, held her down, and then you
have to go. I remember you. No.
No. Yeah. By the way, if you're thinking about getting sheep and you listen to books on tape, go listen to All Creatures Great and Small, which is a story about a country veterinarian and lots of description about different things he's doing with sheep to intervene medically.
Okay.
A lot of that's around the birth. That book saved my butt in that situation, because I had read that book and I've read all of those books, and I knew what had to be done, even though I had read Managing Your Ewe, because I saw somebody wanted the title by Laura Lawson. I had read that. It's different in the textbook than within the frame of story. And it also will expose you to a lot of the things that can go wrong with your sheep, so you know what you're getting into.
And I just guess the upshot out of that is those birthing issues, had that ewe not bred until she was more physically mature, may not have occurred.
Correct.
So you have the one thing with ewes dropping when you're not really prepared for it. And sometimes sheep or other animals make babies like going into winter, and you're like, why did you do this? And that's an issue. But it's also about like, it might be less of an issue if you had all mature ewes in your herd than if you have young ones coming up. But if you're doing this, you're probably at some point you're going to always have younger animals that you really don't want to breed.
Yeah. And the hassle of having babies here, there, and everywhere throughout the year, that's not the end of the world, except for that they can get under the fence and they will get under the fence and back under the fence. And so that, you know, like if it's high coyote pressure season, like right now, that can be a problem, but that's not so much the problem. It's that I prefer the ewes to have a chance to get to full hip size before they do that. And other people don't manage their flocks that way. That's just me. I don't like the thought of what that's like to be pregnant as a, you know, preteen, basically.
Yeah.
Your physical things. Like, let the body get mature and then go.
I mean, even really good dog breeders always do that. They don't breed their girls in that first or second cycle. They get them mature and then they start breeding them. And then they give them, that's the other thing, right? You give rest cycles sometimes too to certain breeders and what have you. And if you aren't creating separation, you don't have that opportunity. We have another question.
That's actually why I don't do mine twice a year. It's once a year.
And that way they're always getting a rest, right? Yeah. Every season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Halim says, would you, Nicole, let us know the titles of the sheep books? You did one. What about the other? So managing your view.
Lamb problems. So lamb. Now that you have babies, you know what can go wrong? Everything.
Everything.
Everything can go wrong. If your sheep flock, if your ewes are in good condition, fewer things go wrong.
Okay.
If the nutrition is balanced, because a lot of what goes wrong has to do with when they're transitioning from milk to grass, like, and the grass is too rich, that can cause problems. And then also if your ewe is not giving them what they need, that can cause problems. And then this one, I haven't read this yet, but this is the Sheep Production Handbook, which is more of a commercially focused book.
Okay.
But it gives you just from the American Sheep Association.
Yeah, that looks like light reading.
It's not light reading, but it's a reference. And, it, you know, you can get more into some of the details of diseases that I probably would just process or, you know, process the animal if they had one. But it helps you understand the symptoms of the diseases and what they are for troubleshooting, as well as other lots of other lamb-related things.
For those on the audio only, that book looks like, if you can think back to when we had encyclopedias, like the M and N version of the World Book put together in one giant book. So, yeah, not light reading, but probably a very useful book. I think that is the end of our questions. So I think we're ready to wrap up. Nicole, you want to tell people how to get coffee, how to learn more about you, how to find your podcast, all that good stuff?
Sure. Everything you need to know about me is at NicoleSauce.com. But if you want to get a jump on your Christmas orders, head over to hollowroast.com, order coffee. If you write in the comments you don't want it shipped till later, I will ship it closer to Christmas. We have a lot of people who like to get that in. And then the reason I asked to be on the show is I kept hearing people talking about Just Raised Sheep for backyard meat.
Yeah.
And the just in just is hours and hours of work.
Yeah.
And you can do it if you do that pasture method. It's still going to be more work than rabbits or quail, right? But, you know, it's going to be work. So know what you're going into there and then make your decision. Like, do you want to do it perfect permaculture or do you want to just get some meat? In which case, can you get a couple of rams that you just raise once a season from somebody who raises sheep like you would do with pigs? So anyway, but definitely get your coffee orders in hollowroast.com. We've just launched a couple of new things on there, like the bean barrel, which makes a great gift. And if you just like coffee, it's a great place to go if you just like coffee.
Awesome, Nicole. Well, I can attest to the coffee. It is what I'm drinking right now. Nicole got down here and got mad at me because I was drinking Starbucks. I'm like, look, I ran out. Like, and she really didn't like it because of the winter blend, right?
No,
like,
then I snuck a bag of Jack's Bourbon Cooled into his coffee.
Well, I didn't know.
Looking. He's like, is this your coffee? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was different immediately. I'm like, this is really good. But anyway, thanks for being with us today, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
And get those links and resources. I'll make sure they're in the show notes for you. All right, guys, real quick, just before we wrap up, I want to remind you about a few things. One is the Our Soil Conference is actually going on right now. It's in day two. And great speakers. If you've never been to one of Matt Powers' seminars like this before, basically the speakers pre-record their presentations and then they're dropped each day. And then there's live panels and other live discussions that go on. So mine will be day four. This is day two right now. You'll see my presentation on cover crops. And then on day five, which is Saturday at 1 Central, I'm on a panel on a bunch of stuff, but basically really focused on food production in the backyard. But I wanted to call out a couple of things you might want to check out if you sign up for this conference. One, day one, Kelpie Wilson did a fantastic presentation on biochar. Absolutely outstanding. Day two just dropped today, and I got the time today. I was able to watch Ray Archuleta's presentation. That was all good, but the last third of it was absolute fire. Like, you can tell he makes this shift, and it's like things you've never heard from him before. And Dr. James White has a presentation that dropped today. I haven't watched that one yet, but don't miss that one. The best thing about this conference, again, it's called Our Soil, r-soil is the website. It is free. It is 100% free. All you got to do is sign up. I think if you want the recordings like permanently, I think there's a cost associated with that. But just to attend and view these, and you can kind of view them in your time, because again, each day he drops everything except the live panels first thing in the morning of each day. And this runs Tuesday through Saturday. So even though it's already started, you can still sign up, check it out, and don't miss my panel because it's going to be friggin' awesome. Next today is the item of the day, and it's the one I had earlier this week, and I have it actually here for you. It's the Meter Wireless Smart Meat Thermometer System, and I wanted to actually show this to you so it makes more sense. So these individual probes like this, for those on the video anyway, these are what you actually put into whatever you're cooking. And if you're just doing a roast, you could just use one of them. What's actually really cool, though, is sometimes you get different readings. That's because different spots are different temperatures. So a large roast, you could actually put two of them. They all have a little number. It's right on the back, so you don't forget what it is. Inside the block, they all actually charge up. There's actually a battery in here that you replace, and it charges these individually. And so if you're cooking like four really nice thick steaks, you can put one in each steak, and you know when to pull each steak to get that exact cook you want done. The app is fantastic that comes with it. The app is free, and it tells you like the temperature at. You can set up a cook. It alerts you when to pull, proper rest for the different cuts. It's all there. And these will actually, if you want to go that far, they can all become a device on your network. So instead of just using the Bluetooth, which is kind of the, you know, out of the box, super easy method, but it's not really hard once you set it up. You can be anywhere in your house, anywhere in your property. Honestly, you could leave on a long, slow cook, and you can check in on your cook from anywhere, again, and get alerts about when to pull it, or if you're overheated, or if something's wrong, or if your battery died. These are usually like $230. They're on sale right now for, I think, like $180. I don't know how long they'll be on sale for, but I will tell you this. Every time I tell you something is on sale, it's never just to sell it. It is because it's really on sale, and this is not something that goes on sale often. I have a price alert on this. This is the first time that price alert went off in 2 years. So one more thing on it before we close up. You already have one, or you don't want one, or whatever. If you have a food-centric person in your life that especially is a meat cooker that likes to cook big, thick hunks of meat, whether they be roast or thick chops, thick steaks, this is what you want to get them for a Christmas gift. They will hug your neck and they will love you. There's a lot of people out there, they want one, but they won't bite the bullet and buy it because they are kind of expensive. But this is definitely a buy once, cry once. I've owned this one now for, I think, 4 years. It's never given me anything but great results. So check that out. With that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Tomorrow will be an expert counsel Q&A show, and then we'll have our Friday flashback. And then next week, I know we just had all this time off, we'll have regular shows Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday next week will be the Thanksgiving special I did with Keith Snow years ago. Tells you how to nail the cook on your turkey and things like that. And then we'll be off for Thanksgiving week, and we'll be back at it the following week for regularly scheduled programming. Take care, guys, and have a great day.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.